show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we actually have been blessed by the baseball gods with some actual, real, tangible, legitimate baseball news to talk about this week. So be thankful. Don't forget to tip your waitress. And thanks for the news from the baseball gods. But before we get into that, introductions, of course, I am Jeff Herr, and with me is the man who's always making deals, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this? The weather, it goes crazy. It's actually quite nice now. So, but I hear it's supposed to freezing rain tomorrow morning and make my commute into work awful. So,
yay, the Midwest. If you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Tried and
how
true.
Are you doing this evening, despite weather fiasco?
I'm all right. I'm gutting through it. I'm getting through the week. Stuff's hectic, but you know, whatever. The beat goes on.
Well, these days, that's kind of all we can hope for.
Right.
That's where we're at. So, we'll just jump right in. The Royals made a trade this week. So, hot stove season, you know, wasn't necessarily one that was whispered about or talked about much at all, really. Some of the pieces that moved were talked about individually, but not necessarily in the context of making this trade. So, anyway, we'll just go through the details of it. So, it was actually a three-team trade, which Dayton Moore, as conservative as he is, you know, he's made a decent amount of trades in his time, but not too many three-team deals. You just don't see many in general, let alone from a GM like Dayton Moore. So, kind of interesting, but it involved the Dodgers, the White Sox, and the Royals. So, the Royals give up Joaquin Soria, which will no doubt please some people. They also give up Scott Alexander. Scott Alexander goes to Los Angeles to the Dodgers. And Joaquin Soria ends up in Chicago on the White Sox, where the Royals are sure to see him multiple times throughout the season. in return, the Royals piece of it, they get minor league pitcher, right-handed pitcher Trevor Oakes and infielder Eric Mejia from the Dodgers. So there are some other pieces that move, but it doesn't really impact too much as far as the Royals are concerned. So
listen to the White Sox podcast for those pieces.
Yes, if you'd like to know that.
Who cares?
Yes. So the big piece is the Trevor Oakes as far as the Royals are concerned. And he, you know, not a super highly touted prospect, not necessarily a nobody either. You know, I can't, what did he see? He was ninth in the Dodgers system. Is that right? Or 19th?
He was 19th in the Dodgers system, but they also have a very good farm system. So
yes, they do.
19th is not too bad.
It's the rich get richer.
Right. That's according to MLB Pipeline. Their rankings had him at 19th. You know, he's not bad. Clint Scholes, after the trade, said that Oakes would be maybe his number 11 prospect. So that, you know, that bodes well. The Royals aren't the deepest system. They're not the strongest system. You know, Oakes is all right. I mean, he's a decent get. He's probably going to compete for fourth or fifth starter spot. Gets a lot of ground balls. It's pretty good control. He's got a 4-1 strikeout to walk ratio over his career. You know, interesting. Plus, the big thing is If he makes the big leagues, he'll make the league minimum. He has all of his options. So he's basically a blank slate. And he doesn't cost $9 million to pitch out of the bullpen.
And if you remember back in – I know you remember, Mike, but if the listeners remember back when we used to have Jason Parks on before he went to start winning world championships as part of the Chicago Cubs front office, one of the players that we talked about that he kind of I don't know if I say liked as is a little strong even, but like a Jason Adam, where he mentioned – you know, multiple times when we discussed Royals prospects when Jason Adam was still in the system, talking about how, you know, he was going to be a fourth or fifth starter. And, you know, as a left-hander, Jason Adam had a little bit more of an advantage just because, you know, left-handed. But
he was a righty.
Was he a righty? Why do I think he was
you
left-handed?
You might be thinking Chris Dwyer?
Maybe. I don't know why I thought Jason Adam was left-handed. No, never mind. Anyway, right.
He was tall.
Scratch that. Yeah. You know, same difference, tall, left-handed, whatever. But it's been a couple years since he's been in the system, so forgive my memory. But anyway, but he was someone who he said could come up. He can give you, you know, four ERA pitching, 150 to 200 innings, be your four or five starter, and that's kind of what he was or what he would probably end up being. And his point was always that there's value in that. You know, there's value in a pitcher who can be dependable, who can bolster that back into your rotation, give you solid innings, and give you a solid ERA, solid walk ratio, solid strikeout ratio for all those innings as well. So it seems like from what I've heard, McLennan has said, what we know of Trevor Oakes, that's kind of the way you lean with someone like him. He's not going to become a frontline starter. He's not going to be like, oh my God, you know, what a trade the Royals got. You know, I mean, I suppose there's a non-zero chance that that happens, but it's not going to. So, but if he becomes the Royals' fourth or fifth starter and gives you 150 or say, call it 180 innings of somewhere between 3.8 and 4.2 ERA range, and, you know, has a solid, like you said, 4-1 strikeout to walk ratio. If that's what he gives you over the course of a season, then, I mean, there's a lot of value in that. And that's a good thing. So, you know, who knows if that's what he'll end up happening, but that's probably closer to his ceiling than it is to what we should expect. But all the same, if that's what they can get, then I think the Royals come away from this trade a big-time winner because they're only going to have one more year of Soria, far more expensive. And like you said, he's coming out of the bullpen. So if you can get that from Oakes and you've had him under control for another 6 years, I mean, you can either just ride it out and have that stability in that role for that time frame, or you know, you can trade him just like the Dodgers did and probably get something for him if he's had a little bit of time to prove himself at the major league level. If you decide a year or two from now, okay, we need even more pieces because we're still rebuilding this thing, you know, then that's another piece that you can trade and just get kind of a – probably end up being a lower-level prospect, but you can still get him. So some good things. You know, it's nothing necessarily to write home about, but, you know, it's one of those ones where I think if – there's kind of two ways to go about it with the trade. You know, you think – immediately you think, okay, one side wins, one side loses. And if it's clear that's what happened, then somebody got hosed or somebody somebody's trying to talk themselves into liking somebody too much. But if neither team comes away either team comes away super happy or neither team comes away super upset, then you're probably made a good trade. You know, so I don't think anyone in the Dodgers fan base is jumping up and down about Scott Alexander, but they're probably, you know, give a nice little head nod and say, okay, you know, could be useful. Same with the White Sox, Joaquin Soria. They've seen a lot of him over the years, the last decade, really. So they know what he's all about. And it's probably one of those things where, you know, okay, he can help us in the closer role if we need it. He can be a setup guy for us. You know, they're trying to rebuild, so he can kind of help bridge that gap if you want. You know, there's value in that as well. And then for the Royals, they get a pitcher who, if he turns out to be solid back end of the rotation guy, they have him for 6 years. So, everyone is just kind of, you know, all right. All right. That's my take on it. I don't know if you share that same take.
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, Oaks is the kind of, the hit on him is really that there's not a lot of upside in there. Like, his fastball can touch 96, but it's really more of like 91, 92. He's got a good sinker, but, you know, everything else, slider, changeup, they're, you know, they could develop, but it's no sure thing. You're right, is, you know, there is value in having a player at the back of your rotation who you can be a reliable, like, number four, number five guy, especially at the league minimum. You know, it's just the bare expectation for that kind of spot in a rotation is don't crap the bed. And last year, that spot in the Royals rotation, they crapped the bed a lot. And so if he can just be average, four and a half ERA, it's not great. But in the scheme of things, you're talking about someone who can go six innings and give up only three runs. You know, that's a 4.5 ERA. That's not great, but it puts you in a position. You know, you're not getting lit up.
Yeah.
So that's all right. And plus, you know, you never know. He might, the slider might come around and the changeup develops into something good. The ground ball rate is encouraging. The strikeout to walk ratio is encouraging. So there's, you know, some stuff where you can kind of look sideways and squint. You might find something. So it's an okay return for the Royals in that sense. The main kind of thing out of this, though, is just that they really felt like one of the things they needed to do was cut payroll down. And initial reports were talking about trying to get down to a $110 million payroll. Now, I think Ken Rosenthal reported they were thinking more about 100 to 105 in the payroll. So, you know, you lose Soria, that's $9 million. That ends up putting you at about, according to Kotz, Kotz MLB contracts, they're at about $111 million right now. According to David Leske's projections, they're at about $110.7 million. So they're getting there. There's probably, if they're really looking to hit that mark, a couple of other moves. But they, you know, they didn't give up nothing. Soria, for all of the angst and teeth gnashing and pearl clutching of last year, you know, he was all right. I mean, he maybe was pushed a little too much in back-to-back days and in some high leverage spots. And there were certain points where you kind of saw the confidence slip. You saw the body language, the slumped shoulders and stuff. But in the 2 years with the Royals, the two past years, he had a 113 ERA plus. So he was better than average. It's just that nobody ever points out, hey, he's gone 9-10 games without giving up a run and just a couple of hits, because they're waiting for that three-run inning to happen, and that's what you remember. And that erases a lot of the progress of the good stretches with just one bad stretch. So, you know, it's, that still counts against him. He's someone who can blow up pretty easily. So I guess we hope he does that with the White Sox now.
Yeah.
But the one that I think most people are probably, I guess, would be maybe excited just because of potential is Scott Alexander, who for so long was like that guy on the 40-man roster that we kind of figured was going to get cut. And then they figured out that he was diabetic, and they figured out how to get him to perform with that in mind. And, you know, he really turned it on. He was effective last year. He has a strong ground ball rate. He's got a couple of different pitches. He's got some deception. And depending on who you ask, I know Fangraphs has referred to him as Zach Britton Light a couple of times because he's a lefty with an extreme ground ball rate. And that'll translate really well for the Dodgers, where he doesn't have to be the guy. I mean, they've got Kenley Jansen there. They've got a lot of other good relievers. They even have, you know, great starting pitching. So he can just be a lefty specialist or a ground ball specialist and really excel there. And he's going to do so at the league minimum. So that's really beneficial to the Dodgers, who have been maneuvering to try to get their payroll under the luxury tax so that next year they can go sign an MVP candidate and or Clayton Kershaw. Plus, just, you know, if you can be more efficient with your payroll, why not do it? So it's really a good deal for them. And I think the White Sox, what they get out of it is they got Soria. They also got Luis Avilon, another pitcher who's been around for a couple of years. And I think they're probably going to see what they can do in the bullpen and flip him in July. So they kind of get that. Plus, they got cash from the Dodgers and cash from the Royals. So kind of works out for them. You know, the Royals were kind of handcuffed by Soria's salary, where I don't know if I heard that the A's were also interested. But, you know, if it was just going to be a salary dump trade, you weren't going to get much of anything. In this case, they had to include Alexander to get anything of value back and also be able to dump the contract. And that's kind of the price you pay for those big free agent signings. And you see the same kind of thing up and down the roster, where Jason Hamill's making a lot of money this year, and Brandon Moss is making a lot of money, and Ian Kennedy's making a lot of money over the next 3 years. And, you know, it's just the Royals are in a spot where they feel like they've got to deal those guys off to get to the payroll they want. You know, but they're filling back in with guys, you know, at least in the case of Oaks, someone who can make it to the big leagues. And maybe he won't be up the whole year, but if he pitches well, he'll be up for a good amount of it. So that kind of fits with what they're doing. So, I mean, I don't like it, but I don't dislike it. It's a fair deal all around. It's one that the Royals maybe could have avoided, but, you know, that's where we are. So I'm not going to fret too much, because right now the name of the game is they're just going to try to cut payroll. And maybe that means another trade is in the works down the line, but you know, maybe they're at the point where they're just going to see what they have and go ride it out. So it's going to be interesting from here on, just to kind of see how Oaks does and how the rest goes. The other thing is that they got Eric Mejia in this trade, and you know, he's not really anyone who's going to light the world on fire, but you know, anytime you have a chance to get a speedy switch hitting middle infielder with no power, why not? The Royals.
Why not?
Royals have never been averse to collecting those types of guys.
No, so, they almost have some sort of a weird fetish for them.
Yeah, they've been a little better about it, but man, they have still, you know, that's what they do. So, but you know, he can make a little bit of contact. He's got a good arm, good speed. You know, who knows? I don't expect him to do much, but you never know. So
you never do know.
Yeah. So it's fair deal. It's interesting. It's, I don't know. I'm kind of resigned to the Royals being pretty crappy in 2018. So
yeah.
I'm not too worked up about anything. I don't think, just going to get through it, see what happens, see what's left after the dust settles.
Yep. And there's still dust left to settle. So still, we're waiting. Hosmer, Moustakas,
everything,
Kane, everyone. Nobody signed, but it does seem awfully interesting, if you will, to see the just no activity. And you know, there's the idea that with Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, and oh my God, Clayton Kershaw. Sorry,
Kershaw, Donaldson. There's
Donaldson,
someone else.
Yeah, so many. You know, and Kershaw obviously would have to opt out, but most think that he will. But just that many free agents and high profile, surefire free agents. You know, as good as Hosmer is, he's not in the same class in terms of dependability as a Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or something like that. So, right. You know, a different class of free agent next year. So, there's a pet theory kind of that they're just kind of holding out, waiting for that, you know, whether it's Boston or LA or whoever else, especially LA when Kershaw's already on your team, you don't want to be the team that loses him. So, you know, it's certainly possible, I suppose, but, I don't know, man. It's still just kind of a head scratcher. I got, you know, this week has been rough for me in terms of being able to follow many things on internet. So, I mean, have you heard much besides because, you know, you guys keep me posted a lot in the Slack chat if I have a busy week or something, but I haven't really seen much.
Nothing to report. I mean, the only development that's really come around is that today Dave Cameron from Fangraphs announced that he's been hired into the San Diego Padres front office, and he's not really a fan of Eric Hosmer's. So Does that mean he's going to come in and be able to sway them away from making an offer or sway them towards pulling the offer? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, maybe a 1% impact. But, yeah, right now there's just nothing. And I guess it just comes down to the owners have their money. You know, the owners are just, you know, they don't need their payday. And they're waiting for these guys to kind of blink and take whatever kind of contract offers, even if it's at market, below market, shorter length, whatever. You know, it's just a game of chicken. And, you know, like we said with Hosmer, there's so many other first basemen who are out there that it's just like, why would you not, you know, just give it a shot and just see if you can ride it out? Because if Hosmer happens to go somewhere else, you can always get other guys. You know, Logan Morrison, Luke Studa, John Jaso, those guys are still out there. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's still another week of just nothing. I mean, I really figured that something would pick up. You know, the winter meetings, there were all these rumors and all this, you know, stuff. It kind of felt like maybe things were actually going to get kickstarted. And we're a month after that, and we're not really anywhere closer to having resolution on most of these guys. It's very strange. So I don't know. I'm out of ideas for what's going on with them. I just don't know anymore.
Yeah, I got absolutely nothing. I don't know. So in lieu of any more deals to talk about, whether it be the Royals or any of baseball, we decided we're going to take a trip down memory lane here. So today is or this month, depending on, you know, obviously you might not be listening to it the same day we're recording, obviously. Well, you won't, because it won't be up till tomorrow. But we're in January of 2018 is what I'm getting at. And that was the scenic route to get to that point. But so as January of 2018, and specifically a few days ago on January 6th, it marked the two-year anniversary of when the Royals signed Alex Gordon. So if you remember, we've kind of alluded to it and talked about some details, but you know, obviously the Royals coming off the 2015 championship, Alex Gordon, the big home run in game one, you know, and I can't remember, was it when we had Jonah Carey on that he talked about it, but somebody made, I can't remember, we had some guests around that time, but you know, I can't remember which one made the point exactly, but the Royals may not have won the World Series without that home run that Alex Gordon hit. Mm-hmm. You know, and his 2015 wasn't necessarily spectacular, but he had, you know, a lot of the injuries, and that's what, of course, it, in the most fortuitous of circumstances, if Alex Gordon doesn't get injured, similar to the Hochschaver Wade Davis scenario, where if Hochschaver doesn't get injured, maybe Wade Davis doesn't go to the bullpen. Same deal with you know, if Alex Gordon doesn't get injured, maybe the Royals don't make a trade for Ben Zobrist and end up getting him. You know, maybe they would have because they needed a second baseman anyway. But you never know. Point being, he struggled, but he had that shining moment. He rounds the bases, you know, the finger in the air.
Iconic.
Amazingness. Yes, the Royals come back. They win the game. Win game one, go on to win the World Series. We all know that. So bringing that up because keeping that in mind – for how the fans were viewing the situation, which the Royals probably take into account a little bit too much, specifically given how the organization has been in the past, but I feel like the Royals really value what the fans think, and maybe they shouldn't as much, but they do. And so there was a lot of excitement around Gordon, even though his season left a little bit to be desired. You could kind of blame it on the injuries if you wanted, but there was this prevailing thought, you simply cannot let him go. He's a homegrown guy. The Royals, you know, they brought him up. He stunk. They brought him back down to the minors. He relearned a position. He rededicated himself to the sport, came back up, won all these gold gloves. He's been fantastic in the outfield, had some great seasons, some MVP caliber seasons. led them to the – had a great 2014, led them in their big stretch in August to help propel them into the playoffs. You know, and then 2015, the big moment. So all that kind of culminated in this growing fan sentiment that Alex Gordon simply had to be re-signed. which the Royals eventually did, but there was all this back and forth. He could end up in Chicago with the White Sox. There were some other teams that were possibly interested. He was going to be too expensive. The Royals didn't think they could afford him. They thought they were going to leave him. You know, they gave him essentially the contract that they gave him, 5 years, $70 million. They essentially gave that contract and then kind of thought somebody would come over the top of it, I think. But nobody ever did. And once Jason Hayward signed, some of the dominoes fell with some of the outfielders, and Alex Gordon ended up not getting a better deal, so he came back to Kansas City. So, Mike, I think you were telling me you looked up just kind of some factoids about the deal, if you want to break those down for everybody.
Well, the main thing really is that, you know, the Alex Gordon story is just interesting because of the peaks and valleys of it. You know, you've got Nebraska kid, left-handed, sandy-haired, dirty uniform. I mean, we talked about it 2 years ago when he re-signed. We talked about it when he made his resurgence. You know, he was labeled the next George Brett as soon as he was drafted by the Royals. So you're looking at a number two overall pick. You're looking at the college player of the year. The year after that, he was the minor league player of the year. Standing ovation in his first at bat as a big leaguer in 2007. Standing ovation after he struck out in his first at bat as a big leaguer in 2007. And a lot of struggles. And they kind of ended up at a point in 2010 where, you know, he was demoted to change positions. You know, we weren't sure what was going to happen. There was probably pretty close to being traded at that point. And that position change ended up making the difference. In 2011, he came back, hit great, played great defense, and ran off a five-year stretch where he was, you know, one of the better five-year stretches the Royals have seen from a player. It was just the defense, the hitting, and everything. And then he has these heroics in Game 1 of the World Series, wins a championship with his hometown team, homegrown star. You know, people are talking about where you put in the statue. And then he re-signs, and everybody's excited. And so peaks and valleys. And so he has this kind of this struggling start, even though, you know, it was all right. I mean, I think it gets overblown because that start to 2007 was so bad. And some of his time in 2009 where he was recovering from some hip surgery was pretty rough. But overall, he was, you know, he wasn't good, but he was passable at least. So I just kind of went and I looked, and it cuts into three different eras where you've got that 2007 to 2010 range where he was the bust, more or less. You have 2011 to 2015 where he's the rebuilt, rebooted, rejuvenated Alex Gordon. And then you have the 2016 to 2017 where he's got this contract. And it's very stark in the performance level because – those are arbitrary endpoints, obviously, because I'm picking the years he was good and the years he was not good. But, you know, he went from a 733 OPS in through 2010, but in 2011 through 2015, he had an 809 OPS. The weird thing is his strikeout rates, his isolated power, his walk rate, they were all relatively close. Some of the differences were really that his batting average on balls in play was significantly better from 2011 to 2015. He had a better line drive rate in those years. So it just really correlates to that line drive rate. He just hit the ball more solidly. You also see in those two splits between that first era and second era that he swung and missed at the ball less in that second batch. So, you know, he made a lot more contact and he made better contact. He struck, he had a 18.4% swinging strikes from 2007 to 2010 and 16.2% from 2011 to 2015. So then you get that player who has rebuilt himself into an all-star, into a leader in the clubhouse, into a franchise level, you know, retired number territory kind of guy. And then 2016, he came out and he didn't do much at all. 2017 was even worse. So the last 2 years, he's had a 649 OPS. That isolated power has dropped from being in the 160s in each of the previous two eras to 132. You know, his walk rate is down. His strikeout rates have jumped up from being around 21% combined in the first two eras to 26%. So just a lot of issues with that. And his swinging strike rate went from 16.2% from 2011 through 2015 to 19.4. So, you know, a lot of the issues that you see, he's had a lot of trouble with the fastball. And I think bat speed is a thing. My pet theory is that he's getting into his 30s. Maybe the eyesight is diminishing a bit. He's not picking it up as quickly. That's going to impact how quick your swing is. If your swing isn't as quick, you can't adjust to the pitch. You know, it just all follows. And it may just simply be that age is catching up to him. But the big kind of picture is that there was all this excitement 2 years ago when the Royals re-signed him because all of that baggage was there. And then he comes out and he's been so disappointing over the last 2 years. And now the Royals are in this position again where, like we just said, they've got all these payroll concerns and you've got Alex Gordon making $20 million each of the next 2 years. So, you know, that really puts the Royals in a bind. That really sticks Alex Gordon's legacy into a weird spot. And that's kind of what people are thinking of right now is that, you know, you had this guy who for 5 years was so good and arguably one of the more valuable players in all of baseball, who now is completely overpriced. I mean, he's even beyond the bust that first time period kind of suggested. So that's everything that's going on with Alex Gordon. I don't know how he turns it back. I don't know how he gets back to where he was or even climbs back up to average unless it's just a matter of more time in the video room, more time in the cage, things like that. I mean, he doesn't seem to, you know, I don't think the Royals ever really pinpointed what the deal was. So, you know, that's kind of the big concern now is can Alex Gordon do anything or is he just going to be this empty payroll that you really can't sit because he's too good in left field, but you know, it's tough to march him out there if he's only going to hit 210 and doesn't hit for power anymore. So I guess it's probably the appropriate swing for the Alex Gordon story, but it's really disappointing to be in this position now watching him because for so many people, he's been one of the favorite Royals, even in the struggles early in his career. But, you know, especially when he got it turned around. So to see him back in this position where he's really fighting it again in the context of everything else going on with the Royals and payroll, et cetera, you know, it makes him an interesting case for this next season. And, you know, it's a lot of, I guess his legacy is probably, you know, going to be determined by what he does next year. So, you know, if the Royals aren't any good, Alex Gordon is maybe one of those stories that we need to be watching in light of everything that's happened in his career and especially what he did 2 years ago this week where he signed that huge deal and now is looking like an anchor, more or less.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, you know, to see how Alex Gordon's contract has played out so far, because if you were to imagine the Royals being competitive next year or even in the next couple of years, you know, while he's still under contract, one of the eventualities that has to play itself out is Alex Gordon has to rekindle that 2011 to 2015 time frame in terms of his offensive output. And any signs that Alex Gordon can get back there to where he was are non-existent, really, unfortunately. You know, sometimes you can look at a player and you can say, okay, you know, X happened at this time and it affected him for this period. And you can kind of maybe single out, okay, well, if you go back and you look from, you know, the beginning of July to middle of August, he was completely healthy, he had a good run, and, you know, he was back to being the normal Alex Gordon that we knew from that time period before the contract. But with Gordon, you really can't do that from his last couple of years, really. It's just been straight bad the whole time.
Yeah. You know, he's maybe a week where he hits the ball pretty well, but it goes just as quickly as it comes back.
Well, we were kind of talking about this a little while ago, and didn't you say you found a stat, something about how multiple extra base hits in the same game?
Yeah.
He only had like one or something.
He had
ridiculous.
Literally one game where he had more than one extra base hit last year. It was a home run and a double against the Angels, I think. And that was it. Otherwise, it was, you know, just a handful of games. I think it was maybe even like, I don't even know. I'm trying to think there was another one connected to that where there were only a few games where he had an actual extra base hit, but I guess it would follow that. Maybe it was multi-hit games. Like, I think there were only like 15 multi-hit games all year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he still walked. I mean, there's still that. He can still draw a walk and work a walk, which provides a little bit of value. But, like, there was a certain point last year where teams just were not going to be afraid to go at him. And, you know, I couldn't find the numbers on this, but I would imagine he probably led the league or was in the top 5 or 10 of regulars who faced 0-2 counts. It just felt like every time he was up there, took the first pitch for a strike, fouled off the second pitch, now he's 0-2, and you know, you can't do anything. And I think in some ways the pitchers always knew that they could just kind of get ahead of him because if nothing else, they could always get the fastball past him. And, you know, so there was just not much fear of Alex Gordon anymore from opposing pitchers. So the walks were just, like, barely accidental, I guess. It's just, yeah. I mean, that's that just one multi-extra base hit game all year. And it's not like he missed time. You know, he played pretty much all year. It's just he just didn't do much. You know, it's just
he used to be a guy where, you know, he's had a couple 20 home run seasons, but he doesn't necessarily strike fear in your hearts as though he's just going to drop a bomb at any point in time from a home run standpoint. But he was always a guy who it was a fear of giving you a good at bat, you know, driving you deep into the count, getting some pitches off the pitcher. Maybe he connects with a bloop single. Gets a double, maybe he does hit a home run, maybe he takes a walk. You know, he used to do a lot of those things. And so he was just always someone that you knew was going to be able to work the situation into his favor because he was just would give you some really good quality at bats. And those days are gone, just as you said. And that's maybe the most telling aspect of why we probably shouldn't expect much good from Alex Gordon moving forward, just because, you know, like you just said, it's not – you know, going up 2-0 or 3-1 and kind of forcing the pitcher to pitch to you. The pitchers were forcing him to try and hit to them. And anytime you're a pitcher and you can do that, then the hitter's in trouble.
Yep.
I mean, the pitcher has the advantage in all those scenarios, no matter who the hitter is. So, you know, very good hitters are able to still capitalize. But Alex Gordon, if he ever was a very good hitter, is no longer. And so he couldn't capitalize on anything. And it's just, you know, looking for hope for signs of anything with Alex Gordon next year. And I don't know that you can find any. I don't know that you can see any. And we've looked really hard.
Yeah.
And it's tough. So it's unfortunate, but that's kind of the reality we're living in for next year.
Yeah. It wasn't encouraging at all last year. Like in 2016, he was rough, but he was kind of had a similar season to some of the early years where, I think he was like an 85 OPS plus, which is not good, but you know, it's not terrible. But he was like Getzian last year with his OPS plus. It's just not good. And I mean, I guess there's no – well, I can't really say there's nowhere to go but up. But, I mean, you got to kind of think with someone, his work ethic, that he could figure a way to get it to turn around as long as it's not something that's like a physical issue that holds him back. But, like, I just don't know. And that's what I'm worried about. It's just – there's not a whole lot that I'm really expecting out of this next season. And the fan in me just wants to see Alex Gordon do well, because I want to know that Alex Gordon can still do well. And that's, I guess, the hope. I mean, it's probably a small thing to be hoping for, but it's just like, when I think back to 2 years ago, I really felt like this was going to be like, you know, maybe he'll retire as a Royal. He'll go out in a very old school kind of way, spending his career with one team. But it's like, if he struggles going into July, I don't know if he stays on the roster much longer. It's just, it's really disappointing to kind of think about. So, fun reflection.
Yeah.
On a big signing.
Biggest in Royals history at the time.
Yeah. Eclipsed only by what? Kennedy. Kennedy's was bigger, right?
Yeah.
Well, that one worked great
Gordon's
too.
Gordon's was 70 and Kennedy's was 72 million, right?
Gordon's was 72, and I think Kennedy's was 75. Oh, okay. 575.
That sounds right.
5 for 70, that's... maybe? It's a lot. I mean...
Yeah. They were really close, but Kennedy just came over the top.
You're spending a lot of money on a lot of guys, on a couple of guys who... Well, Kennedy had a good 2016. Last year wasn't very good. He was also hurt a chunk of time, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, Alex Gordon, I don't know if he's going to end up in the Mike Sweeney territory where, you know, everybody just hates him now because he's making so much money and not performing. I guess I get the sentiment. I don't know. So, yeah, it's been a rough 2 years since that signing.
It has been.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Made more so, you know, like – if the Royals went and signed, you know, Mike Jacobs or Jose Guillen again, you know, and had those 2 years, you'd be like, oh, it's a crap signing. Get these people off the team. You wouldn't really care, you know. But Gordon, there is that connection, you know. There is that fan feeling about it, you know, because of just everything that you broke down when you were talking about him earlier with the standing ovation and all the minor league player of the year, college player of the year. He's from quote unquote Royals Kingdom, you know, where living, growing up in Nebraska his whole life and all these things. So, you know, with that attachment, it makes it even hard to truly accept and kind of talk about the reality that he's just not been good. And the signs are probably not there, and it could end pretty badly, you know, in baseball terms. So like you said, you know, despite the money, I mean, if you're the Royals and, you know, it helps that they have kind of a weak farm system, so it's not as though he's blocking anyone right now. But
right.
You know, if you're the Royals and you're trying to build for the future, is it worth lugging around, you know, $17 million or however much he's making, $20 million? Is it worth lugging that around for another couple of years, or is it worth just, you know, cutting bait and saying, let's bring up somebody else and you know, try and see if they can get something going and develop some talent, and, you know, it'll be cheap and, you know, do what you do. Other teams do it. You know, the Royals don't quite have the funds that other teams do in terms of being able to just let something go like that, but I don't know. At some point you just enough, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's like the situation where they, you know, they had to just finally get rid of Omar Infante. It was just, there's a certain point where you just can't do it anymore. And even if it means you're going to take a hit, you know, there's the money's spent, you know. I mean, you're not going to find someone who will trade for Alex Gordon's contract. You know, they're not going to do it. You're going to give up cash in a significant amount somehow. You know, you put him on waivers, no one's going to claim him. I can't even imagine anybody would trade straight up. You know, it's just the money's gone. You have to consider that it's gone and hope that maybe he can recoup some value of it and give you something back and kind of go from there. But I mean, otherwise, you know, if it's best to just move on, that's what the Royals ran into with Infante. It was just, they had to just do something different. And if it meant that they were going to be paying him to not play for them, that's what it took, because they just couldn't continue to do it. So that's where the Royals are almost at. I mean, he's going to open the year with the Royals, and he's going to, you know, do his best because he's Alex Gordon. That's, you know, what he does. But I don't know, man. It's I'm just worried about it. You know, you're just thinking it's the 50th year of the Royals. It's their 50th season. You think about what Alex Gordon has done within this organization, where he's been in the organization for basically a quarter of that time. You know, for basically 25% of the franchise's history, he's been around and had one of its biggest moments in Game 1 of the World Series. So, you know, you kind of think about those kind of players. Like, for me as a fan, I don't want to see them doing badly, but, you know, it's the facts of life is that, you know, 2 years ago the Royals re-signed Alex Gordon expecting a lot, and they haven't gotten hardly anything out of him. He did win another Gold Glove, so there's that. And I did think his defense was really, really good last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's legit, but the rest just has to be there too, and I'm skeptical that it comes back.
Yeah, I am too. So with that unfortunate reality setting in, I think we'll end our show on that.
Speaking of other, I just went and jotted down, not to interrupt the outro, but just because I jotted them down, and I just want to relive the names. Some other January signings. Noel Arguez.
Oh, fun.
Back in 2010, another disappointing signing. Jeff Francis in 2011, signed in January.
Oh, Jeff Francis.
Chengming Wong was signed 2 years ago in January as well. Actually pitched pretty well for the Royals that year.
Yeah.
And Scott Podsednik was a signing back in 2010, and he actually had a good year too, but yeah, some other names from 2 years ago this kind of week. So, but yeah, Alex Gordon, obviously the big one and the most disappointing one.
Yes.
So hooray. Most definitely. Okay.
So hooray.
Now you can take us out.
Yeah. but before we do, another thing, just another reminder that Clint's Rose Prospect Handbook still out there. Of course, you know, it's digital. So again, it's $5, and we've got the link up on the website, bpkansascity.com. So go and check that out. And if you want to catch up on the farm system and hear more about what the Rose got going on down there, then definitely no better source than Clint. And as we mentioned last week, I don't think relative to the team they are covering, I don't know if you'll find anyone that covers the minor leagues of a team better than Clint does the Royals. So definitely check that out. $5. It's nothing. It's a pumpkin spice latte. Less than a pumpkin spice latte. And then, Mike, you were telling me something about Aaron Stille, who's a great Twitter follow if you want to follow, but he's doing a Strat-O-Matic season, right?
Yeah.
Is it still going on?
Yeah, it's a really cool project. Like, I mean, I got a copy of Strat-O-Matic last Christmas. And
my dad's been doing it for years. He loves Strat-O-Matic.
I mean, it's really cool when you really get down to the nerdy side of it. And Aaron went through and what he did, it's the Grand AL Rhubarb is his Twitter handle now. But he basically took every American League franchise and determined, based upon players' time with that franchise, who their all-time teams were. So, for instance, Carlos Beltran, you consider his years only as a Royal instead of his years as a Met, as a Cardinal, Yankee, et cetera, et cetera. So he took all these teams and he created his own cards. Like, so if you've ever played Strat, it's basically you roll a die. It tells you if you're going to go off the pitcher's card or the hitter's card. Then you roll another 20-sided die. It's very nerdy, like I said. And that kind of determines the outcome. But the cards are generated based upon the actual stats and based on the probabilities of how a player performs. And Aaron, you figured out a grid and a workaround to create cards specific to those teams. So he's got a card in there that's specifically Carlos Beltran's years with the Royals only. and how he performed. And he did this for all these teams. It's a huge project, and it's just – it's incredibly it's so nerdy that I just love it. I've been following it all year. And he put them where he simulated a season just by playing these games out. And so that's something he's been working on. He's finally down to the championship series, and it ends up that I think it's he's got it split up between an expansion division and an originals division. I think it's Boston won the originals division, but the Royals actually won the expansion division. So it's just something to kind of keep an eye on. Follow him on Twitter. It's, he's posting an update about every day. I think it's a really cool thing. You know, I remember when I got that Stratomatic game, I just did a simulation of what if the Royals played the Cubs in the World Series instead of the Mets, and the Royals still won, of course. So, it was real fun. And Aaron kind of took it to an obsessively cool level. And an obsessively nerdy level. So give him a follow. Check him out. I've retweeted his stuff a lot when it comes up. So I think that's a cool thing. So I would recommend just go check that out if you have any kind of interest in Strat or board games or anything like that. Really cool project.
Yes, absolutely. So anytime we see, you know, cool stuff like that, cool projects, we like to kind of promote the Royals community and baseball community around Kansas City. So definitely give him a Twitter follow. Go check out his stuff. It's really interesting. The nerdier you are about baseball, the cooler it will probably be. So if you're you're baseball nerds like Mike and I, then that kind of stuff is really fun and really cool. So be sure to check it out. Even if you're not a nerd, it's worth a glance because it's just fun that I like to see passion in anything.
Yeah.
So when people put passion into something and, you know, do it really well, I think it's awesome. So even if you're not into Stratomatic, you know, go check it out just because it's fun and it's cool to see somebody who just, you know, really does, you know, really gets into something and does stuff like that. So anyway, with that, we will leave you on this evening, afternoon, morning, whenever you're listening to the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We, be sure to visit our sponsors, bpkansascity.com, of course, pumping out great content. There's write-ups on the trades, write-ups on Trevor Oakes, Eric Mejia, who's, you know, what's what to expect from them. We got up on the website, you know, just general Royals content always going up. So and we'll keep you posted. If you hear any Royals news that has happened, check, you know, might not happen immediately, but within the day, usually within a couple hours or so, we have something up talking about it. So definitely be sure to check that out. And then Kelly's Westport Inn, of course, our longtime sponsor and great place to, if you have if you're heading to Westport, want to have some fun, definitely go to Kelly's, have a great time there. But as always, we remind you, when you go to Kelly's, be responsible. We'd like you to continue to be listeners to the show, so please be responsible when you have your good time. So with that, we'll leave you. Thank you all so much again for listening. Couldn't do it without you. We love you all. So until next time, we'll see you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at BProKansasCity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.